You have a wonderful wife. Man, yes. Absolutely. What's the cup for?
It's in your hand.
Oh. I'm going to have a lot of these. If you want to sit here, Stefan, and I can just toss them in there for you. There's usually a lot over time. You have a wonderful wife. Are you looking for a wonderful wife, Stephen? My single guys out there. If you have a wonderful wife, what's wonderful about her? She's long suffering. Yeah. Anyone else? What is it about your wonderful wife that you love? She bared your child. Yeah, that's huge. Anyone else? She takes care of you. Yep, I'm sure that's a huge task, Stefan. Anyone else? Anyone else? What stands out to you about your wonderful wife? What's that? Greatness. If you don't have a wonderful wife and you're looking for one, what are you looking for in a wonderful wife? Stephen? I'm picking on Stephen. Somebody loves God as much as you. That's a good one. We're going to bring out a point very similar to that. What do we look for in a wonderful wife? Is it the beauty? Is it the character? We're going to see in this passage, Lemuel's mom describes this wonderful wife, and it's all about her character. The title of this teaching is A Wonderful Wife. A wonderful wife. A wonderful wife leads to a wonderful life. In Proverbs chapter 31, picking it back up, verse 10, it says, "Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. This is point number one. A wonderful wife is hard to find. A wonderful wife is hard to find. Now, this section is an acrostic poem, meaning there are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet, and each line starts with one of those Hebrew letters in alphabetical order, which is really cool. We've seen this in other places. You see it in several of the Psalms, like Psalm 119, the longest chapter in the Bible. We see it does that time and time again. Now, the Hebrews did this because it made it easier to memorize the passages, to memorize the sections, the chapters. Remember, the whole numbers that we have in chapters and numbers of verses, all of that. That was man-made for organization. But for the Hebrews, sometimes they did this acrostic method so that you could memorize the sections more easily. But if you think about this, you know, it's inspired by God every time we see this acrostic method. But this would take a lot of thinking, you know, a lot of thought to make sure each line started with this letter and. Trying to get these specific points across and verses across. So it's extremely creative. It's absolutely fascinating. Lamentations 4, we also see Jeremiah use the acrostic method, several different psalms. We see it. But we see here again, it says, who can find a virtuous wife, for her worth is far more than rubies. Now, remember, previously, Lemuel's mom warned him of giving his strength to women, that he shouldn't do that. It robs him of spiritual strength. She didn't want him to be a man that slept around. She recognized the the spiritual consequences of that. And we mentioned this last week, but like we see in places like 1 Corinthians chapter 6, you know, sex is a lot more than this physical act that brings pleasure. There's a spiritual connection that takes place, and you're giving a part of yourself to that individual that you'll never get back, and taking something from that individual that you'll never get back. It's like you're giving a piece of your soul away, which is great with marriage, because it, you know, the two become one flesh, so you're both giving and taking. But when there are multiple partners, you're losing a piece of yourself over and over and over again. So she warned him not to do this, not to be a player, even though he's a king and could get like any woman that he wanted. She wanted him to find one woman, and the right woman, the virtuous woman. Now, she speaks of the type of wife he should be looking for. Now, most often this section is taught to women to help them understand the type of woman God calls women to be, but really this is a mother speaking to her son to help him understand the type of woman God wants him to choose, the type of wife that God wants him to choose. So it's really written to a man. These words are spoken to a man. This is what the man is supposed to be looking for. Now, of course, there's plenty we can learn about women and the type of woman God calls a woman to be, because we see all these character qualities that he mentions in this text. But really, this is like, you know, I remember, you know, people talking about this, pastors even teaching it sometimes, make a list of for young single men that are looking for a wife, and even young single women that are looking for a husband. Make a list of the type of person that you're looking for. This is the type of wife that I eventually want to have. This is the type of husband that I eventually want to have. For a man, the list is right here in the Bible. This is what you should really be looking for in a woman. Now, obviously, Lemuel's mom realized that finding this type of woman is really hard. It's really difficult. This is a rare breed, the virtuous woman in Proverbs chapter 31. This isn't something that's easy to find. Now, I was looking at statistics, in the United States, there are over 52 million unmarried women in the United States over the age of 18. Now that's a lot of women to choose from. But how many of those are the virtuous woman? Okay, what's that percentage? It's probably very, very small. Now, this word virtuous in the Hebrew, it's hail, H-A-Y-I-L. And it means power, strength, competence, valiant. Now, it's the same word that's used to describe mighty men of valor as well. So it's not just the word virtuous. It's not just a word, you know, used for the virtuous woman. This is a word that's used actually in many different ways, because the word has many different meanings, but all good meanings. But this word is also used to describe Gideon, the mighty man of valor, okay? It's also used to describe the men in Exodus chapter 18, verse 21, the able-bodied men that Moses chose to help him lead Israel. Remember, his his father-in-law told him, hey, you got too much on your plate. You're trying to do too much. You need to delegate more and choose able-bodied men that can help you lead. This is the same word used to describe those men. So this word has many different meanings, but all good meanings. Valiant, strong, obviously virtuous in general. But we see clearly here this is describing a wife, a future wife for her son. It says, for her worth is far more than rubies. The virtuous wife's worth is more than rubies. She's far more valuable than even the most precious gem. This is more precious, more valuable than the most beautiful diamond in the world. And this speaks of, we know gems are so valuable because they're yes, beautiful, but also very rare. Okay. So when something's very rare, it becomes very valuable. So that's what she's speaking of. This type of woman is so valuable because she's so rare. Now, multiple times Solomon spoke of wisdom being much more valuable than rubies, than gold, than silver, than all these material things. It's interesting, in Proverbs chapter 3, verse 15, remember, we talked about this obviously a while back, but wisdom is personified as a female, right? And wisdom herself is speaking, and she says, she is more precious than rubies, and all the things you may desire cannot compare with her. So the woman of wisdom is truly a treasure that is hard to find, a treasure that's generally not just going to fall into your lap, a treasure that needs to be sought after. It says here in Proverbs 31, verse 11, it says, the heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. This is point number two. A wonderful wife is trustworthy. A wonderful wife is trustworthy. Now, in 1 Timothy chapter 3, in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 11, it's talking about, first it talks about the qualifications of an elder or overseer in the church, but it also mentions the wife. It's not just about the husband. The wife is just as important in that qualification, at least the elders or pastors that were married. It says here in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 11, likewise, their wives must be reverent, not slanderers, temperate, faithful in all things. Faithful in all things. The wonderful wife, the virtuous woman, the virtuous wife is called to be faithful, not just in the sense that they're loyal to their husbands, but faithful in all things. Faithful in all things that God calls them to do. It says that the husband here doesn't just trust her. It says the husband safely trusts her. So the heart of the virtuous woman, her heart is so loyal to him and so faithful with even the little things that God calls her to, that it brings this security. It brings this safety to the husband. Safely trust her. Like, her faithfulness just brings that almost protection to him and to his heart. That's so important, that level of safety and comfort that a virtuous wife can bring to a husband. A husband doesn't want to have to be worrying about what the wife is doing when he's away, or is she going to be faithful to him? Is she going to to do the things that he needs her to do, take care of the things that he needs her to take care of. When there's that relationship with the husband and wife, and it goes both ways. You know, it goes both ways. You could, you know, switch a lot of these verses around and talk about the virtuous man. You know, it's not just that the wife should be virtuous; the man should be practicing a lot of these same things as well. But when there is that trust between the husband and wife, again, not just that they're going to be faithful in the relationship and not cheating, but that they're going to follow through with the things that they say they're going to follow through with, it brings just so much security, so much safety. Now, loyalty is a huge, huge thing in relationships. You can't have a healthy relationship without having trust and without there being loyalty. And I remember when I was praying for a wife, well, they told me to. But when I was praying about, like, a wife and what I was looking for, and I wasn't looking for a wife, but this was just, okay, when that time comes, it was very simple for me. I wasn't asking, I don't think, a lot from the Lord. I just prayed that she would be beautiful. I did pray that. But that she would love the Lord and that she would be loyal. That she would be loyal. That I could trust her. Because in the past, I had some rocky relationships where trust was broken. And that's one of the most painful experiences in the world. When that trust is broken and the loyalty isn't there. And oh my gosh, it's heart-wrenching, the rejection, those feelings of just anger and sadness and all of that. And I would rather wait decades to find the right one than ever subject myself to those emotions again. And man, I found such a loyal wife. Elizabeth is so faithful. She's so loyal. And it's like, for one, you know, she came from a broken home where her father did commit adultery, and it destroyed the home and caused obviously a lot of problems. And so for her, that's something that, like, she never, ever could ever can ever consider. It, you know, I've mentioned this before, but in our relationship, you know, we made some ground rules and put up some strong fellowship. Now, when we get in conflicts, we made rules about, here are things that we won't do, here are things that we won't say. And divorce and separation were words that we said, we're never going to use these words. And we have never used them. We have never used those words, no matter how upset we get in a situation, whatever the case may be. We have never made those threats. We have because once you do that, you're planting seeds of doubt in that individual. You're saying to that individual, you can't trust my commitment to you. You can't trust the lifelong vows that I made to you. And it's just, it's a dangerous road to go down. And I don't want, you know, to beat you down if in your marriage you ever use those words. But if you are married, make a commitment now to never use those words again. Never use those phrases again. Loyalty, trust. It's the foundation of the relationship. We have to be able to trust our spouses. I've never had trust issues with Elizabeth. She consistently shows me how devoted she is to me. Not just how much, you know, she loves me as a husband and cares for me and all that, but the support that she gives me. You know, if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be out here. You know, she had to make those hard decisions to leave family and to be in ministry with me, and then come out here with Patmos, and then leave Patmos to come into a church that I had only been to a handful of times and that I wasn't really a part of. You know, we take the Patmos students here sometimes, but man, she was so committed to supporting me and being in ministry. And that was, you know, that was always both of our dreams to be in ministry, but that trustworthiness and that loyalty has been expressed practically in the difficult decisions that she's made over the years, and it's all worked out, and God's just blessed us tremendously. In the beginning, a lot of hard times, but still, pushing through some of those hard times. Now it's like, oh my gosh, we're so grateful we made this decision, and we're so grateful to be where we're at and have this amazing church and to be able to do ministry and to be able to instill God's vision and try to fulfill God's vision, not just as, you know, pastor and pastor's wife, but as a whole body with a family, you know. And it's a beautiful thing, but her loyalty and her trustworthiness and her support has played so much into that. Now, trust in marriage can often be broken in different ways. It could be, you know, infidelity or adultery on the extreme end, and it could be other things, just not following through with our word, you know, being dishonest, being deceitful, whatever the case may be. And when trust is broken, it can cause damage that lasts for years and years and years. Now, that can be mended. That can be healed. You know, I know couples that even they went through, hey, in the past there was infidelity in the relationship, and those wounds were healed. So it can be, you know, healed in the little things and in the big things, but it's much easier to make decisions that prevent that healing process from even having to start. But by not breaking the trust. So this woman is a woman of integrity. She follows through with her word, okay? Her yes is yes. Her no is no. And that brings that safety to the husband, okay? It says, he will have no lack of gain. So the virtuous wife is not a burden to her husband. She's not this symbol of you know, something I have to do and I have to take care of, and she takes so much out of my life, okay? She's like a vampire just sucking my life away, okay? It's like the virtuous wife is not a vampire, okay? It's not the vampirous wife, if that's even an adjective. But she brings gain to his life. She adds value. She adds purpose. She's that helpmate. She's that encourager, that one that builds him up to be a leader, but adds gain in so many different ways. Remember back in Proverbs 18, verse 22, we studied this. It says this, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. So the virtuous wife brings this added measure of God's grace to the husband. This added measure of God's grace, and obtains favor from the Lord. So the virtuous wife, there's this extra measure of favor and grace that God bestows upon the husband because of the woman. So she adds to his life. Adds so much to his life. And yeah, could be adds children, you know, adds this, adds that, but just adds joy in general. It says in Proverbs 31, verse 12, it says, she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. So the virtuous wife is a blessing to her husband all around, all the days of her life. She does good by him and by the Lord. She doesn't do evil, it says. She does him good and not evil. So the idea here in the Hebrew is that her goodness and her character continues to excel and progress all the days of her life. So it's not just, you know, the woman that she is the day that the couple gets married, but because she's continuing to grow in the Lord, she continues to add value to the husband's to the husband. She continues to add favor. She continues to add more and more blessings to the husband's life all the days of her life. She doesn't do evil by her husband. She doesn't gossip about her husband. She doesn't, you know, talk to all the ladies and bash the husband. I remember Mama Lo, you don't know who that is. Okay, so Pastor Chet, his wife, Mama Lo, we call her because she's the mother of many, like mother of many nations. No, they have 9 kids, which is crazy, right? How many adopted? 4 adopted, and at one point they had 11, 2 that they had adopted for like 5-6 years. They 3 of them were child soldiers from Liberia. And they started a ministry, several ministries out in Liberia during the Civil War. So you had 16 tribes, and they're all killing each other, like brutal killing, like sawing each other in half with chainsaws. That's a manual. This is public knowledge, so I don't feel bad telling you. But Emmanuel, one of Pastor Chet's sons, would saw people in half with chainsaws. And this is wild. So Saturday and Emmanuel, well, 2 of them were child soldiers, and 1 was in one of the tribes that they were, you know, soldiers and killed. They plucked him out. They got him out early before he started, you know, getting into the violent stuff, AJ. But Emmanuel's brother was the leader of one of the gangs and tribes, and Emmanuel's brother, his older brother, came into the village where Saturday and his family lived and killed all of Saturday's family, okay? So then later on, so the Lowe's, they start these ministries where they're housing all these child soldiers. So you have child soldiers from different tribes. And so, you know, the word gets out and it's realized that, hey, Emmanuel's brother, and Emmanuel was there being a part of this, he killed all of Saturday's family. And then these two become brothers, okay? Saturday and Emmanuel. But just a wild story. I'm going on a tangent about, but she was the mom. She's the mom of all these different kids, you know, because they had this like adoption thing and they would house these people. Now, she is like the kindest, sweetest like woman ever, like on the face of the earth. And she said that she went to a Bible study one time. She wanted to get a part of this women's Bible study. And when she was there, it, like, all the wives were just bashing their husbands, talking about how, you know, my husband did this and my husband did that. And it wasn't like a women's Bible study. It was like a women's bash their husbands club. And she's like, this is just wrong. I don't want to be a part of something like this. This isn't right. Now, yeah, of course you need, you know, your friends and to be able to vent about things and talk about stuff. But in a group setting, you know, bashing your husband, that's doing him evil and giving him a bad name. There are certain things that we just shouldn't tell certain people about our spouses, and it goes both ways. That's doing evil, evil by them. The virtuous wife, she doesn't do that. She doesn't entertain things like that. Now, Proverbs has discussed several times the negative consequences of marrying a woman who is not virtuous. We see the adulterous woman mentioned several times, but also we've heard about the contentious wife several times. It says this in Proverbs 25, verse 24. I just love this one. Better to live in a corner of the housetop than in a house shared with a contentious wife. Better to live out upstairs in the elements, in the weather, than with a contentious wife. Now, Solomon wasn't saying, you know, hey, leave your spouse if she's contentious. No, that's not what he's saying at all. But make sure you know who you're marrying, okay? The contentious wife, if she's got that bitterness and that hatred and, you know, constantly, you know, causing conflict and being negative and judgmental, if she has that before you got married, don't think like you're going to fix her, okay, when you get married. Now, God can heal her, God can change her, all those different things. But remember, this is a warning. First we see the warning of who not to marry, and then we see the list of things that a young man should look for in a wife, but before he makes that commitment to marriage. It says in Proverbs 31, verse 13, she seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. She is like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She also rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and a portion for her maidservants. She considers a field and buys it. From her profits, the plant she plants a vineyard. Okay, there's quite a bit there we'll break down. First, in verse 13, it says, she seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. This is point number three. A wonderful wife is a diligent worker. A wonderful wife is a diligent worker. So the type of woman, and we know that you don't have to be married, okay? You don't have to be, you know, even if you're single and you never want to be married, you know, so many of these verses still connect to the kind of woman that God calls us calls you women to be. So this diligent worker, we've seen diligence emphasized in Proverbs time and time again. Remember the fool is lazy. You know, it goes from laziness to folly to wickedness. We see that pattern, but the wise, they're humble, they're teachable, they're diligent. So the virtuous woman, she's diligent. She takes care of business. She's a hard worker. She's not afraid to get her hands dirty. She's not like, that's too gross. Now I get it if it's bugs, if it's spiders, if it's things like that. Like Elizabeth, she, the bug thing, you know, the spider thing, it's always like that's dad's job to kill those things, and it's gross to me too, but somebody's got to do it, right? But she's not afraid to get her hands dirty. Now, man, and I'm sorry, I think about my wife when I study this passage, and she's not perfect, but I was telling her, like, babe, as I'm preparing this and studying this, like, man, there's so much that you fulfill in it. Like, just encouraging her. It's true. Like, she's a hard worker. And I'll tell you, one of the things that attracted me to her so much, she has the gift of service, okay? And, man, when she works and I see her serving, and one time we were on the mission field. We were on a mission in El Salvador. And I saw her serving, and I even forget, like, what she was putting together. And she's just in the zone, man. She's in the zone. And it was like she's glowing. She's just operating in her gifts. And I'm like, oh, gosh, that's so attractive. Like, oh, gosh, you're just getting me going. Just like, you know, watching you. It's a beautiful thing to see, you know, one, people operating in their spiritual gifts, if you are married, seeing your wife operate in her spiritual gifts, or even your husband operating in his spiritual gifts, because they're doing what God created them to do. And there's just such a beauty, about it. But the diligent thing, we see whether you have the gift of service or not, and many do, we know we're called to be diligent as Christians, and we're called to be servants as Christians as well. But the virtuous woman, she's not afraid to work. She's not afraid to get her hands dirty. Now, when you look at the variety of tasks that the virtuous woman does here, look at some of these things. We're not even done yet. There's other things that are listed. She seeks the wool and flax. She works with her hands. She provides food from afar. She buys land. She's in the real estate industry. You know, she plants a vineyard. Like, there's a variety of work that this woman is doing. And though, you know, maybe, you know, every woman doesn't do all these different things, you know, in real estate and farming and shepherding and all this different stuff. But you see the variety of roles that women have, especially wives and mothers, all the different things that they have to do. Some of them work full-time, some of them work part-time, some of them stay-at-home moms, but all the different roles that they have with the kids, you know, teaching the kids, some do homeschool, some have little side jobs that they do, you know, certain things, maybe taking care of the house. It's so much, it's so many different things that women do. And so many things that wives and moms do, it's incredible, and it deserves encouragement, which we'll get into in a little bit. But it says she seeks wool and flax, so she's a shepherdess. The wool from the sheep. Now shepherding is no easy task. I've done it many times, and it is not. They run. Sheep run, and they are faster than you, okay? And so you have to corner them, and because they're running because maybe they're scared of you, but you're running after them because you're scared of what's going to get them. You know, I've told some of you this story before, but we had some sheep down in Temecula here, in the middle of the night, because you literally, we're outside camping. It's not like the coyotes and the predators wait till you're awake in the day to come try to attack these things. This is the middle of the night. I don't know. It's like 1-2 in the morning. And here come these coyotes to come after the sheep. And somebody else, coyotes! And there was a pack of them. And we had to chase these coyotes down. But you think about it. Okay, yeah, coyotes aren't really big. But a pack of them, like, they if they wanted to, they could tear you up. So do I go after the coyotes or no? Sorry, sheepies, you're goners. But it's a difficult task, watching after sheep, because you got to protect them from being eaten and being killed. So she's seeking the wool, she's seeking the flax. You get wool from the sheep, so it's implied that she's at least doing some kind of shepherding task. And even getting wool off of a sheep, that's not an easy thing either. It's not like they like that, okay? It's not like they want you to do it. Now, different sheep respond different ways, but a lot of times they're like fighting and trying to get out of the way as you're trying to, you know, get that wool off of them. So that's not easy. That's not easy either. And the flax, this is something you would plant. You plant the flax. So she's farming too. Shepherding, farming. These are really difficult tasks. This is not easy work. It says she's like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. So like a merchant ship, which routinely, regularly, brings food from afar, goes to different places to purchase goods. And, you know, they have their route and they have their schedule. She's routinely going as far as she needs to go to get food, and making sure that routinely the family has food. It's like today, a lot of the moms have to drive down to Costco, and wait in those long lines, But imagine having to walk to Costco and walk back, okay? They were doing a lot of walking during this time. That'd be brutal, right? Sorry, kids, you're starving this week, and I can't walk down to Costco this week. But it says here also that she's like the merchant ship. She brings her food from afar. She also rises while it is yet night. So she's getting up early before the sun comes up to make sure that everything is taken care of, whether it's I have to travel to go get food or get things going with crops and harvests and all those different things. But she's known for getting up early. Now, I like to think that she got up early to get some time with the Lord, too, because clearly she spends time with the Lord. She's a God-fearing woman, we see in this text. This is what Jesus did. He got up long before the sun came up to go and get alone with the Father and pray. And this is the root of all of it, getting that time with the Lord, having that relationship with the Lord. This is what makes a virtuous woman a virtuous woman, is their relationship and intimacy with the Lord. It all starts there. It doesn't say she's getting up and getting alone with the Lord, but we know that she does, spend time with the Lord, because it says she does fear the Lord. It says, and provides food for her household and a portion for her maidservants. So not only is she providing food for her household, but also for her maidservants. It was common during that time period to have servants. When we talked about this, there's certain rules. 6 years, 7th year, you had to let them go unless they wanted to stay with you forever. Bond servants. We talked about all of that on Sunday. But she's not just looking out for herself and looking out for her family. She's looking out for those who are looking out for her. Okay, she's taking care of those who are taking care of her. So we see this compassion. We see this empathy. We see this generosity in the virtuous wife. It says she considers a field and buys it, and from her profit she plants a vineyard. So she's thinking about the future for her family. She's trying to set up her family for long-term success, that they'll have safety and financial security. So she sees a good deal when she finds it as well. Hey, this is a bargain, okay? Get this field for this cheap. These people are, maybe they were going out of business or whatever the case may be. Let's jump on it. Let's get the field and we'll turn it into a vineyard. So not only do I have the property that's valuable, I'm using the property to have a vineyard. So now we got grapes. We can sell wine. She's turning it into a business. But the heart of it is not about making money just for money's sake. She's setting her family up for success in the future. And sometimes, it's funny how people have these different views about the Bible and how women were and how, women were treated and all these different things. And, but this woman, she's a businesswoman. Okay. She's a businesswoman. And she's not just leaving it up to her husband to provide. She's providing as well. And, every family has to work it out in whatever way they see fit and works for their schedules and their convictions and all of that. I'm not saying, hey, if you want to be a virtuous woman, you better go start a business, plant a vineyard, But this woman, she's a businesswoman, and she's using this to take care of her family long term. It says in verse 17, she girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is good and her lamp does not go out by night. She stretches out her hands to the distaff and her hand holds the spindle. She extends her hand to the poor. Yes, She reaches out her hands to the needy. So it says first that she girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms. She uses her strengths practically. Now, the idea of girding yourself is, you know, back then you had like garments, like, you know, maybe you think about like dresses, you usually had like the bottom and then you had like a coat type of thing, and you had a belt, and what you would do if you know, you needed to be more mobile, you would take the bottom of your garment and you would tuck it into your belt so your legs had more mobility, you know, like running in a dress type thing, that's like, you're gonna trip up a little bit. So girding yourself gave you more mobility. You could move faster. You could run faster. In fact, we see at the first Passover, this is what the Lord called the Israelites to do. It says in Exodus chapter 12, verse 11. This is kind of old King James, New King James version. I kind of mixed them together because they're worded differently. It says, "And thus you shall eat it." Speaking of the unleavened bread, right? They had to bake the bread quickly. They couldn't put leaven because it would take too long to bake. So they made unleavened bread. He says, "And thus you shall eat it with your loins girded, your shoes on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste." It's the Lord's Passover. Because remember, they had to leave quickly. So he says, girding your loins. He's, hey, you got to pick up that garment and tuck it into your belt so you can fly, so you can move. Because he knew that Pharaoh was going to change his mind again and come after the Israelites. And then they're washed away in the Red Sea. But we also see a spiritual connection with this whole girding your loins idea that Peter uses in 1 Peter 1:13. It says, "Therefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ." You gird up the loins of your mind. Be ready. Have this, you know, quick thinking. Be sober-minded. Don't get tripped up by the things that distract you, okay? Don't focus on the things that are going to trip you up and make you stumble. Focus on the things that are going to speed you up and help you run your race with endurance. So this woman, it says, not only does it say that she girds herself with strength, it says she strengthens her arms. So literally, she works out. She works out. She takes care of her body, okay? It says like she's doing stuff to strengthen her arms so that she can be strong to accomplish the things that she needs to accomplish. So if you want to be a virtuous woman, you better start lifting, ladies. No. But it's taking care of yourself. Being healthy so you can accomplish the task that God desires you to accomplish. Elizabeth works out with me, and I love that, and we get some really good time together working out. It's great, and I want her to strengthen her arms so she can get the task done. No. But she does do that. It says, she perceives that her merchandise is good. So she has discernment, and she has an eye for quality materials, and we'll see, you know, she makes garments and different things that she puts the work in, the effort in, to make sure that her merchandise is top quality, and we'll see some of that merchandise in just a little bit. It says, and her lamp does not go out by night, so she chooses the best oil for her lamp, so the lights stay on all through the night, because, you know, you didn't have electricity, so you needed lamps, and you needed enough oil and the right oil for those lamps to burn all night. You think of the parable of the 10 virgins, remember, in Matthew chapter 25. We see five of the virgins had enough oil. They had their lamps burning. They were ready, and then the other ones were foolish, and they ran out of oil. And it's a picture for us of being ready for the Lord's coming. Oil in the Bible is symbolic of the Holy Spirit. It's a picture of the Holy Spirit. So if we're filled with the Spirit, we're going to be ready for the Lord's return. But if we're not, we're out of oil, so to speak, we're not filled with the Spirit, we're not going to be ready for when he comes back. It says, she stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hand holds the spindle. She's a multitasker. The distaff was a stick or spindle onto which you would wind or spin wool. Okay, so she's capable. This was the technology of the day. She's capable of using the technology needed to accomplish her tasks. And it's she's using both hands to get the job done. She's not distracted. She's focused on the task at hand. It says she extends her hand to the poor. Yes, she reaches out her hands to the needy. So I don't know. Maybe she has four hands. She's got the two hands on one, and then she's no. But it's talking about what she does with her hands. Okay, she doesn't mind getting her hands dirty. Okay, she uses the spindle to in one hand the distaff and in the other hand, and she's also using her hands to bless those who are in need. So she doesn't just work hard, okay, for her family, for her husband, for her kids, and even not only just for her maidservants, but also for the needy, okay, for those that aren't, like, they're not giving her anything back. She does it because of the kindness of her heart, because she knows that everything she has is from God, and she wants to bless those who are in need. So we see this generosity again. She works hard for the benefit of others. It says in verse 21, she is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household is clothed with scarlet. She makes tapestry for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. She's not afraid of the snow. Okay. Yeah. She's not a flatlander. So the idea here isn't so much like she's afraid of the snow, and like it doesn't snow like crazy there. Okay. So it's not like she's afraid of the snow in the sense that, like, oh my gosh, the snow. It's talking about how she's not afraid of the winter season because she's already prepared for it. She's prepared for the winter season because the winter season could cause a lot of stress for people because, you know, you're not harvesting crops then, okay? Feast of Tabernacles was like the last feast where you had your last harvest, and then, you know, winter comes and nothing is growing. So if you haven't gained enough supplies for winter, then you're going to starve. And we see this mentioned many times in Proverbs and the illustration of the ant, right? They're prepared for winter. So the virtuous woman, she's prepared for the season where there isn't going to be you know, a lot of resources coming in, okay? She's ready for those hard times. She's prepared. She's not afraid, okay? She's not afraid of a season of you know, a difficulty where maybe there's not as many finances or resources, and in this case, crops, because she's prepared for it. And one of the things, one of the ways she prepares is that her whole household, her husband, her kids are clothed in scarlet. Now, scarlet dye was expensive. This is a prestigious color, but it seems to be implying, you know, the color is not as important as, you know, the type of clothing. The idea here is that she's provided her family with the right type of clothing to keep them warm over the winter months, okay? She's taking care of them. They're going to be warm. They're going to be taken care of. The scarlet is the, again, prestigiousness, often a color, you know, royalty would use. So her family's taken care of. Okay, so she's not worried about the difficult seasons that are coming up. She makes tapestry for herself. Her clothing is fine linen with purple. So purple was also a prestigious color. And this dye came from a seashell off the Phoenician coast. Okay, you remember in Acts 16, Lydia from Thyatira. Okay, and she was a wealthy woman because you know she made money from this purple dye. Everybody wanted the purple clothes. Made you look like you were somebody, like you had money. Even if you didn't, because you spent all your money on the purple clothes, but it looked like you were important, okay, and this obviously was a hard dye to get, because you had to go into the water and get these seashells so that you could get this dye. It says in verse 23, I'm going to go a little bit over tonight, it says, her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. So not only is the woman virtuous, the husband is virtuous as well. Him going to the gates, it means he's an elder in the community. He's one of the decision makers. He's one of the leaders in the community. But the idea here is, you know, we just looked at all these things that this woman does to provide for her family. Now we're looking at how this benefits the husband. She's done all this stuff, you know, even taking care of provisions, so not so that the husband can, you know, sit on the couch and watch TV and eat potato chips, but so that he can do the things that are important to him as well, so that he can be there to help lead the community and help make good decisions for the community. So she's taking things off his plate so that he can do some of these things that are really important for the whole community. And I love this about my wife as well. She tries to take so much so that I can do, you know, the things that are important with the church, you know, whether it be studying, preparing messages, or counseling sessions, or planning events for the future, or you know, discipling the leadership, whatever the case may be. She helps me so much by knocking out certain things, especially at home, that I don't have to worry about, so I can focus on some other things that are important as well. And it's all important. It all has to be done. It says in Proverbs 31, verse 24, she makes linen garments and sells them and supplies sashes for the merchants. So she's not just making these garments for her family. She's also making them so that she can sell them. Here's her other another business that she has: the wool, the flax, the real estate, the vineyard, and she makes these garments too. Like, this woman has got to be so busy, right? Like, I can't imagine watching this lady. I thought I was busy, but this woman is like crazy busy. It says in Proverbs 31, verse 25, it says, strength and honor are her clothing. She shall rejoice in time to come. So it's talking about how this woman, though she makes all the, you know, scarlet and purple clothing, the most prestigious clothing, that's not the clothing that she's concerned about. The clothing that she's concerned about is being clothed with this virtuous character. This is point number four. A wonderful wife is concerned with character over clothing. A wonderful wife is concerned with character over clothing. It says in 1 Peter chapter 3, now that doesn't mean, you know, have good character and wear no clothing, okay? You still wear your clothing, okay? But what's the focus, okay? What's most important? It says in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 3, it says, do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. For in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. So we see the emphasis here in the New Testament as well. Don't be so concerned about how you look that you're not focusing on really who you are. Who am I in the Lord? What's my character like? And that's not saying, oh, don't wear makeup and don't try to dress nice and all those different things. Like, it's just what's the priority? Character or clothing? Okay, what am I spending more of my time in? What am I spending more time investing into? Time, talent, treasure. Where is my time, my talents, and my treasures being invested into? Is it growing in my relationship with the Lord? Okay, or is it primarily focused on, you know, my outward appearance? Though the virtuous woman makes exceptional garments for her and her family, and even to sell to make a profit, she's more concerned with her character over her clothing. Back in Proverbs 31, it says also here in this verse, in verse 25, it says, she shall rejoice in time to come. So all her efforts that she puts into growing in character, in her knowledge and relationship with the Lord, it's going to pay off. In time to come, she is going to rejoice and recognize that all her labor is not in vain. It says in Galatians chapter 6, in Galatians chapter 6, it says in verse 7, got to wrap it up real quick, it says, do not be deceived, God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will also of the flesh reap corruption. But he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. And let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. So if we're purposing to be the virtuous person, if you're purposing to be the virtuous wife, even when it seems like it's not paying off, it's going to pay off eventually. God is not mocked. We reap what we sow. We reap what we sow. And when we're sowing seeds of righteousness, okay, sowing seeds of the Spirit, okay, it's going to benefit us. You know, I know young women that, you know, they love the Lord. You know, students I had at the Bible college, students I had at Patmos, like, love the Lord. Great, great young women. And it's like, okay, maybe they got rejected by a guy. And, oh, it's not worth it, you know, like, why do I even do all this stuff? You know, it's like, you're not doing it for the man. You're doing it for the man, okay? You're doing it for the Lord, okay? This is all for the Lord, and the Lord is going to reward you eventually. It says in 1 Peter chapter 3, going back there, in 1 Peter chapter 3, we see, you know, even as a wife, you know, sometimes, you know, you have couples that, they got married and you know, maybe young, and then maybe the wife later on gave their life to the Lord. We see that a lot in the New Testament. Or maybe the husband, you know, was good at pretending that he was a Christian, but over time the wife realized that, man, I don't know if he really is a Christian or not. We still, ladies, as Christian women, have a duty to keep pressing on, keep pushing through, keep fighting the good fight of faith, keep pursuing the Lord, and in hopes that you'll win your husband over to the Lord eventually. It says in 1 Peter 3:1, wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives. You never know how God will use your conduct to win them over. You never know. He said, even without a word, just the conduct, just the works. Back to Proverbs 31. Try to rest this up real quick. I was thinking about doing a couple teachings on this because there's so much good stuff in here, right? There's so much. Decided to do one long one instead. It says in verse 26, she opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. So the virtuous woman, she speaks wisdom. Okay, she communicates wise words. Okay, because she spends time with the wise one. She spends time with the Lord. Wisdom comes from God. And when our heart is set on the Lord and on the Almighty, all-wise one, okay, then wise words are going to come out of our mouth, because out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Okay? The mouth speaks. So wise words are coming out. But listen, not only that, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. So she speaks wisdom, but with kindness. She speaks the truth in love. She has her speech, you know, with grace, seasoned with salt. It says in Ephesians 4:29, let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. Man, if we focused on that, is building each other up with words, speaking what is edifying, that it can impart grace to the hearers, that they hear the grace of God in what you're communicating, even if it's something hard, okay, that you're communicating. It's a hard truth, that it's a rebuke, whatever the case may be. But speaking the truth in love. It says in verse 27, she watches over the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. So she's a shepherdess over her household. She's a watchman or a watchwoman over her household. She's watching over the ways of her household. That means being intentional, okay? Like the watchman, you know, they see an army coming or, you know, scouts coming. Like they, you know, ring the bells, you know, start the fires, the warning fires, like whatever they can to warn. Like they are intentionally watching, okay? Right, it says here, and does not eat the bread of idleness. She doesn't fall into the trap of idleness and complacency. She's not a watchwoman that falls asleep on the job. Okay, she doesn't eat the bread of idleness. Okay, she's watching over the ways of her family instead of being distracted by watching Netflix. Okay, nothing wrong with watching Netflix, but she's intentional. Okay, what she allows to come into her house and what she doesn't. It says verse 28, just get to verse 30. It says, her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. So the children, they get up in the morning and they're called, blessed, Mom, you're so blessed. We love you so much. Okay. I love when my kids get up and they're so excited to see me. Oh, especially on Wednesdays because I'm gone all day long, and so they don't really get to see me. Except in the morning when, you know, we do our little thing and pray and say goodbye. So at Wednesday morning, they're like so excited to see Dad. But Dad usually sleeps in. Or sorry, Thursday morning. Dad usually sleeps in on Thursday morning because up pretty late on Wednesday night. But this isn't about me. This is about the virtuous woman. Okay? Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her kids see her character, see her love, and they bless her. And her husband also praises her. He encourages her. He regularly shares with her how grateful he is for her. I'll tell you, a lot of guys struggle with being overly critical. And I see it in marriage counseling, all these different things. A lot of times, overly critical even of their wives. And they often point out a lot of more negative stuff than positive stuff, and that's detrimental to the relationship. We've talked about this before. You want a good relationship, there's got to be 9 encouragements for every 1 discouragement, okay? That's what you know, different psychological studies say. It says in verse 29, many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. This is the husband speaking to the wife. Many, many daughters have done well, but you are greater than them all. Like, you're the best of the best. I'm so glad I chose you. You're perfect for me. It says in verse 30, charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. This is fifth and final point. A wonderful wife fears the Lord. Wonderful wife fears the Lord. It says in Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10, Proverbs 9, 10, it says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. So this is the foundation of this woman, her knowledge of the Holy One, her fear of the Lord. But first it says that charm is deceitful and beauty is passing. So Lemuel's mom is speaking of a woman who uses her charm, and even in the Hebrew, that word charm, she's using it, her beauty and charm, in a deceitful way to entice the man. And it is enticing for a man, a charming, beautiful woman, until, the makeup's all rubbed off and you see her for who she really is. And it ain't so pretty. She's ugly, ugly inside. She's not what she pretended to be. But a woman who fears the Lord, she has real charm and real beauty that is going to last forever. For my single men, there's not a lot in here right now. But what you want to look for in a woman above anything else is that woman loves God more than you. That she loves God more than you, okay? That she loves Jesus more than you and more than anything else. In verse 31, it says, give her of the fruit of her hands and let her own works praise her in the gates. So the woman who fears the Lord, she's eventually going to receive the fruit of her labor. The lifestyle she lives, it's going to be recognized, and even the community will praise her. So we look at this passage, and apologize for going way over time tonight, but the standard is very high. It's extremely high, and that can be a little discouraging for ladies. Like, look at that. There's no way I'll be able to achieve that. But I encourage you to look at some of the things that you are excelling in, some of the things that you are doing well in, and then look at the areas where, hey, maybe I can improve on this a little bit. Because remember, the sanctification process, it's a lifelong process. We're all growing, but we see the standard there. It's like the standard of love in 1 Corinthians 13. None of us have met it, but we're still called to continue to strive for it. So how can I be better? How can I do better in this? And with the men as well, how can I be the virtuous man? How can I pull some of these character qualities out that I know that I'm called to practice, and I know that I'm called to grow in this? But remember, Lemuel's mom, her biggest emphasis with this woman was that she had the fear of the Lord. That she loved the Lord, that she had the fear of the Lord. Because it all starts there. If we love the Lord and we fear the Lord, that's enough. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for your word. Lord, I thank you for everybody sticking around, even going late. Lord, just thank you for their commitment to want to grow in their knowledge and understanding of you. And Lord, I pray for all our ladies, God, that they would continue to grow as virtuous women. Lord, there's so many amazing ladies we have in our church, Lord. So many ladies that they're so close to this standard, so close to meeting it. But we also know none of us are perfect. So I just pray that you would continue to encourage the ladies that are here, the ladies that are watching, the ladies that maybe watch later. And I also pray for the husbands, Lord, that as they see the virtue in their wives, maybe not doing everything perfect, but the things that they see, that they would be moved to encourage and build up their wives. Lord, I pray that any husband in here, including myself, we would be faithful to build up our wives and cherish them. They are a gift from you. And for the single guys, the single ladies, I pray that they would take this text seriously and they would purpose to fulfill it, whether they be a male or a female, Lord, that they would truly look at this as your standard and strive for it. For the ladies and for the guys, that this would be what they're looking for in a female, someone who fears you and loves you, Lord. So we thank you so much for your love and your grace. In Jesus' name, amen.